joining us right now is Jason Russell. He is a contributing editor for the Washington Examiner and had a very, very interesting piece on the state of Washington, D.C.'s metro. Apparently, it is the worst in the world, which, hey, congratulations. Jason, welcome to Mornings on the Mall. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
So I see that the Washington Metro has won some awards as being an example to the world of what not to do, which I don't know if you get a trophy for that. Hey, good job. Here's the thing. In your piece, I found, we're dealing with a problem of rude workers, workers who don't know what the job is, increasing fares, decreasing service, unions blaming the politicians, and politicians blaming the unions. Now, that's just the top hits out of where the blame lies. Out of everything that you've uncovered here, it's exhausting. How do we even go about fixing this?
Yeah, I think the first thing to remember is that there's no silver bullet. There's no one simple solution that's going to fix everything, right? It's not just a question of, oh, let's just, you know, get a huge federal subsidy that's going to fund everything, and it's not just, oh, let's get rid of the union, right? There's going to be a lot of small fixes, and a lot of it has to be a change in the culture at Metro. Something that Congressman Jerry Connolly talked about when I interviewed him was that there's this culture of mediocrity at Metro, and that's something that seems to be slowly but surely starting to change. It helps that, General Manager Paul Wiederfield has been doing a good job at, you know, actually firing workers who do terrible things like falsify safety inspection reports. And so there's been a small but surely a culture change there that needs to pick up the pace, hopefully. But that's the big thing, I think.
You know, I don't know how you bring that culture change around when you're dealing with a union. And, hey, no offense to the union here, but they're going to protect their own. And they did in that case. And they said, hey, you know, it was falsifying records. It was just shoddy paperwork.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you change that culture?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it starts at the top with Wiederfield, you know, holding people accountable and not just holding workers accountable, but holding, you know, the other members of his head administration accountable and holding himself accountable and saying, if certain things aren't working, you know, accepting blame for things that don't work and figuring out how to look for new solutions rather than just, you know, working over and over with the same tried and failed methods that we've been doing for the past, I don't know how long you think Metro's been failing, but at least the past decade, probably longer.
Jason, I was really struck by the numbers in your report for any number of reasons, but among them, 2008, there were 750,000 people on an average weekday riding Metro. That has dropped now in 2017 to 612,000. A full 130,000 or so fewer people are riding it now than 9 years ago. And there's a whole host of reasons for that, clearly. One of them has to be that this SafeTrack program, which just came to a conclusion, has led to just miserable service for people who are looking to get in and out of D.C. at rush hour for the entire year and have probably planned new courses, right, of getting to work?
Yeah, I think people have probably just gotten used to that. They've said, okay, well, I've, you know, gotten in the habit of taking the bus or driving in or driving to this station and then taking the bus in from there or whatever. So people have definitely gotten used to reduced service over SafeTrack. Maybe that's why no one was shocked when Metro decided to cut service even further.
Did SafeTrack work, though, to the extent, I mean, the whole point was to try and fix up the system, modernize it, get it all nice and good so that all the trains could run well. Do you have any data at this point or any sense that SafeTrack was an effective use of their time and our money?
Not yet. I think we'll have to look at the next few quarters. That's how often Metro comes out with new data on on-time performance and breakdowns and delays. And I think you have to look at, you know, the change from pre-SafeTrack to what, you know, the numbers were like during SafeTrack, and then, you know, over the next year or so, looking at the numbers post-SafeTrack.
I should also point out, you mentioned that the Silver Line opened up in 2015. An entire new line opened, and yet ridership is down by almost 130,000 people.
Yeah, I think that was incredible. I mean, we spent so much money on the Silver Line that could have been spent on, you know, maintaining what we already have. Then, you know, the SafeTrack might not have been as necessary, or the new fare increases might not have been necessary. I think that's one of the big problems with transit systems in general is that, you know, politicians love to have these ribbon-cutting ceremonies for opening new stations and new lines, but you don't have a ribbon-cutting session for, we fixed up this line that used to be broken, and now it's fixed.
Exactly.
Not as much public attention.
Representative Jerry Connolly, who is a Democrat out of Virginia, is talking about getting this a federal subsidy for the metro that is annual, that this would be part of that they can rely on every year in the budget. How close are they to getting something like that, and does it really solve problems?
Yeah, it's definitely a big problem. I don't think it's likely under a Republican Congress and a Republican administration. I think they would definitely balk at, you know, especially with the number of members of Congress who Republican members of Congress who are not in the D.C. area. You know, they would definitely be saying to themselves, "Why should my constituents be paying for this system that they're not using on a daily basis?" And the other thing is, you know, how do you know that that money is going to be used well? You know, you really have to fix the accountability problem in Metro first before you want to give it that annual subsidy, because that's just money that they're going to get no matter what, right? That's not strings attached to, performance or quality. I mean, you could try to do that, but it's unlikely that would happen. And so how do you know that doesn't end up like that Metro Forward program that started in 2010, where we spent $3.7 billion on maintenance and, you know, in the end, SafeTrack was still necessary. These fare hikes were still necessary. So where did that money go? How do we know that this subsidy is going to work if we get it?
So you mentioned in your piece fare hikes are coming June 23rd, I believe. They're supposed to show up June 25th, rather. And when they get here, it's going to result in, on average, I think, a $50 annual increase for people who ride Metro, which is to say that rush hour fares will jump by 10 cents to and from work. That's probably not going to do any favors to the ridership numbers, no?
No, I wouldn't think so. And then, you know, when you raise fares, obviously people take that into account. They say, you know, I could spend $50 extra a year, you know, riding trains that, you know, may or may not get me there on time. You know, a quarter of the time I'm going to be delayed on these trains if I pay $50 a year. Or, you know, I could look into using Uber Pool, use driving, or, you know, whatever other alternative there is out there to taking the Metro.
Absolutely. Jason Russell, thank you so much for your time and good luck fighting this battle. You know what, though, I have to say, this piece really helped unravel a lot of it for me. There are so many moving parts. So if you are a Metro rider, you want to check it out. It's in the Washington Examiner today.
One upside for everybody moving to their cars, they can listen to WMAL.
Absolutely. And Jason, thank you. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you very much.